Hour 2 Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. Currently in studio, Brian Hayes and Jamie Noodles McLennan. We have hit rock bottom on this show. This is rock bottom, Noodles,
we're going to out him?
Yeah, oh, absolutely we're going to out him.
Okay.
The O-Dog is not currently in studio. He was supposed to be back by now. We've talked about this on the air. The cafeteria's
situation.
Right. It's being renovated. It's being upgraded. So it's been shut down for a few months.
Well, yes. The next 3 months, June, July, and August, there's a full renovation going on. But the problem is it was used to be so close, we would roll there and
we're talking 25 feet from our studio.
Nibble, so, and you'd get a drink, you'd get whatever.
4 minute break, you could get anything you needed done. You could get over there, order food, pick up food, buy drinks, buy coffee.
Right.
So to compensate for that issue, TSN and CTV, what they've done is they've hired a food truck, but the food truck is on the other side of the building.
Yes.
So the O-Dog gets up right after the MyPillow read.
Yes.
And says, I don't care, I'm going.
I'm going to drive over.
He drove over to the food truck, which is on the other side of the building. I'll bet you the lineup is all the way to Markham Road. This guy may not return until 5:30.
He may get back in the 5:15, 5:20.
Because you know he ordered something that was going to take a long time to make.
Well, he wanted
probably
fries.
Probably poutine or something.
No, but he wanted fries. And I will admit, I said, yeah, get some fries. I'll dive in on those. So I may have contributed to the problem, but
this guy,
I was when he walked out the door, I think both of us looked at each other and said, there's not a chance in hell he's getting back by the time we're back on air.
No. There he is.
It would take him, it would take 7 minutes just to get over there.
Did you actually just drive over to the food truck or did you run over there?
No, I drove and it still wasn't enough time. So never again. It's a joke. Get us some food somewhere else but that.
Well, what do you have in your little bag there?
Salad.
Where's that from, though?
Just a burger and some wedges.
That's all he had.
So what do you mean? Like, that was packaged that way? Like, do you want a burger and wedges and almost like...
There's four things. I'm like... I go, I need tours of French fries. He's like, I don't have French fries.
None of French fries.
Well, for me and you.
Yeah, I said, I would. We just told everyone that you drove over there, and it's...
You have to, by the way, or else it takes an hour.
And it's 1,000 degrees out.
It is so hot outside.
How about how hot it is in the studio, too, man? It's not much better in here.
Well, he's wearing a suit. You have I don't even want you to take that coat off.
Yeah, what are you doing? You should have seen the swass on this guy at the golf course today. He had... I thought his shorts were double shaded, like the front was like a khaki and the back was like a navy blue.
He had some issues.
This guy's swass coming around the turn at around 11:30 was absolutely biblical in nature. Just some of the worst swass you've ever seen in your life. But what do you expect? It's 34 degrees outside.
Yeah, well, that was a joke of an experience.
Well, you're back now, and we're trying to track down Jim Rutherford,
so the
GM of the
wedges?
Pittsburgh Penguins.
I don't mind wedges.
You got to know going in you're getting a wedge, though. If you're preparing for fries, I'm not a fan of the wedge when you're thinking fries are coming out.
You know what it is? Is it a beatnik food truck? It's like one of those like...
What do you mean? Like he biked here?
No, but it's like he tries to be like, I don't know what it is.
Like I'm gonna make vegan or something?
Yeah, I'm going to make you a kale, some sort of kale something.
Wouldn't that be something, man, in this place with all of the hooligans and the gremlins and the people that do not take very good care of themselves?
He'd make $16 a day if he rolled in here.
It would be quite the troll job by Bell Media if they shut down the calf and then just set up a vegan food truck for the summer.
You go from the gravy boss... who wants to put gravy on your salad, to like, hey, I'm going to make you a kale whatever, kale sandwich.
I'm into it every once in a while. I'm a smoothie guy now.
I don't mind smoothies.
I love a good smoothie.
You want to win people over? Put in a smoothie bar anywhere. Because you can have the strawberry banana with a little protein or something, like a booster juice. Or you can...
Mix it up even more if you want.
I agree.
Well, Jim Rutherford will join us here in a moment, the GM of the Pens. Three-time cup winner. Two-time stuff.
Three.
I mean, he won one in Carolina, as we know, in 06. Went to a cup final with Carolina in 02.
Right.
And now, ever since he showed up to Pittsburgh, man, he had the magic touch. And I was thinking about it last night. Because we've been so focused on Phil and the fact that ever since he got dealt, he's won two cups.
Right.
Jimmy Rutherford showed up. The first thing he did was
trade James Neal.
Trade James Neal. And James Neal now, I guess, technically has missed out on two cup rings.
Yeah.
And they still would have won those if they had him over Hornqvist, wouldn't you say? Now, I mean, Hornqvist is a really good player, but James Neal is equally as good.
It's just one of those things, where you just get the perfect chemistry.
And hadn't Neal scored 40?
He had scored 40 in Pitt.
That's right.
First thing Rutherford did, showed up and said, for whatever reason, this is my guy, and we've got to move things out, and we've got to mix and match. And how can you deny what he did?
You can't.
You can't dispute any of the moves. I mean, everything Jim Rutherford has done so far has worked out.
Yeah.
Including firing the coach halfway through the season two years ago and bringing in Mike Sullivan.
I agree.
Everything's worked out.
It takes stones to do it, but it's certainly worked out. And he's a cagey general manager. I mean, you know him very well. And
yeah,
I mean, if we get a chance to talk to him, if he comes on, I'm saying
there's a real good chance he's going to blow us off.
I think there's a chance that maybe, but I'm saying
we're not getting him today.
Oh, you brought it up.
They just got home.
Okay,
but
then why did he agree to come on the show? We didn't make this stuff up. Someone reached out, and
maybe
Steph was bugging
us
him.
Sam, maybe I will, maybe I won't.
I think he's going Sam Mitchell.
But I would want to ask him, and I think, you could probably ask him this. He did a pretty good job of doing politicking. What was it, a couple games ago? Saying, I may have to rethink the way I structure my team.
I thought it was brilliant. You didn't see Sidney Crosby in the penalty box, did you?
No, plus, it was a general manager battling for his player.
Absolutely.
And using the media as a tool. And you can do that. And I thought that was a wily move, put it that way.
Well, the officials, they played a part in what happened, let's be honest. I mean, a lot of people are still buzzing about the quick whistle in the first period and how that maybe would have changed the outcome of the game. But yeah. I also saw some people on Twitter, and I know using Twitter as an example is always a dangerous game, but suggesting that this is in the same category as the Brett Hull foot in the crease, and it's not even close. I mean, the Brett Hull foot in the crease...
That was a cut-and-dry rule.
Cut-and-dry rule.
Yes.
Which clearly the NHL just bailed on and said, you know what, the gloves and helmets are on the ice. We're not going back and telling them that this game, that this cup-winning goal isn't going to count. That was literally the cup-winning goal.
Right.
This was a mistake. It was in the first period of Game 6.
It was a human error.
It was a mistake. He thought it was smothered. You could understand from his angle why he would have thought it was smothered.
Yeah.
It's not like Brett Hull. I mean, it's a talking point. It's something I think people will remember. But they still had another 50 minutes left to play the game.
Yeah,
and they got the 5-on-3. My only point about that was you're in the finals because someone deemed you to be good enough throughout the playoffs to get there. But you're there to not screw that up.
I agree.
Big blunder. Like there's no take. There's no. I can't sit here and
your
and
take
defend
is him. I like human error. My take as a former player is I don't want a referee taking away a goal from me in the Stanley Cup Finals that could have greatly affected the outcome of the game and the series.
I'm not saying I like human error.
Nobody said it numerous times.
No, I've never said I like it. I'm not saying I'm advocating for it.
You don't like it, but you support
it.
Human error.
I support it over the alternative, which is nonstop review, which I'm sick and tired of.
Here's
and you
problem.
Can't review that situation.
And you get it. You head into down a road that you can't really go back on, because if you start adding everything into a review, now everything's under review.
Well, exactly. And that's my concern, is that that's where it's going. That everyone keeps using extreme examples and saying, well, clearly now we got to do this. Like, people are going to use this example, just like they did the Matt Duchene 5 feet offside example, as an opportunity to table the idea that this should be reviewed. And where does it stop?
Well,
like, it happened. It's a one-off. That doesn't happen very often. Don't change the whole course of history and the whole course of the game simply because one guy made a mistake for one moment.
Even Hornqvist's goal could have been, it was close to goaltender interference. It wasn't. I believed it wasn't, personally. I know there was contact, but Pekka Rinne was in his crease, out of his crease. You know, it was a scramble play. I don't think there was an intentional. There was contact, but I don't think it really...
You can't call that. I mean, there was no way they could call that.
All I'm saying
that would have been an awful...
But that was another 2 minutes you had to wait, too.
Yeah.
But that was league, because it was under 2 minutes, the league initiated that one.
Have you ever seen anyone in your life skate faster than Carl Hagelin?
No.
He was shot out of a cannon.
That was a racehorse. Like, actually,
That's why he was on the ice.
I thought he was outstanding last night, though.
I thought he played well, too, but I couldn't believe, like, it was PK that made the mistake and let it get past him.
Just think, though, the motivation. He's already one of the fastest guys in the league anyway, but you got a chance to win the Stanley Cup. You are going to be flying.
Did you see him shovel it in the...
Oh, yeah.
He cupped it.
He cupped it. Like, he wasn't going to have a Patrick Steph.
No way, man.
He skated that right into the net.
As you should. As you should.
He had enough time and space where he could.
Well,
no one was within 10 feet of the guy.
It was unreal.
I couldn't believe him skating through the neutral zone at that pace.
And there's some ghosts at that net. I think it was somebody from Nashville had an open net and pulled a Patrick Steph on.
Craig Smith.
Yes. He got right to the goal line and tried to roof it.
He tried to be a hero
and
tried to
put it in the press box.
That's right.
He
I remember
put it
that.
In the press box.
Yeah, he went hero, and it went. Yeah, honestly,
and by the way, if you're listening, right try up. To YouTube this. It's the most
it's
bizarre.
Craig
thing.
Smith. It's Craig Smith.
Might have been against
netter.
The Leafs.
I don't know.
I don't remember who the opponent was.
I'm
going
to look it up now because I remember that he was so rattled when he went back to the bench, and I think it was like Mike Fisher or somebody leaned over, and they were all kind of laughing on the bench
because it was early in his career.
Yes,
like
he
I think
was
it
like
was
a rookie
a few years ago, and he was he might have been a rookie. And he was off to a great start.
Yeah.
I think it was early in the season, and everything went
versus
south.
Versus the Leafs, November 17th, 2011.
Yeah, it was against Toronto. You're right. 6 years ago. So he would have been a rookie that year, I would assume, because I think he's 26 now, something like that.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, that was.
That's in Nashville, though, and he goes to bury that over.
Good for Hagelin, man.
They
don't
even
make any
turn
mistakes.
The spotlights on and stuff. Like, you know, they put the lights on the guy that scores, and it didn't go in.
Could you believe that? Oh.
Well, we had someone...
Barry Trotz
is losing
this it. Video is brilliant, because Barry Trotz is like, what? What's going on? And the guy's on the bench.
Trotz's facial expressions to begin with are pretty
awesome.
Funny. Because he's got some twitching going on. Like he's like his eyebrows are flying around, and then his mouth, and it looks like he talks to himself a little bit behind the bench.
Oh, like He was at the top of the crease when he goes to put that up in the under
it goes
the bar.
Straight up into the
straight
air.
Straight up.
Like he shot a gun. No one knows where the bullet ends.
Like
up.
I wouldn't be shocked if this thing went, you know, the netting? Over the netting.
Well, it would have gone over the netting for sure.
It was a chip shot, like 60 degree wedge. 64
Mike
degree
Fisher
wedge.
Mike Fisher is sitting beside him, mm-hmm. howling. Like. Why wouldn't you? I mean, if you're going to win that game anyway.
The game was over. It was the 2011 Leafs, believe me. They weren't too concerned about it. Phil would have been on that Leaf team, and someone sent us a tweet last night asking if Phil is creeping towards Hall of Fame status. He's got two cups now. He's got a lot of playoff points, too. Like, his playoff numbers and his playoff resume actually look very good. He's got an Olympic history, and he's got the passport, which I do think factors into the voting.
Right.
Americans take into consideration where American players stack up compared to other great American players.
Here's the
he other. Hasn't missed a game in
has he missed a game
7 years?
Is he, he's missed a game in his career though? Early
yeah, he missed games in Toronto. Remember, I think he was injured to start his Maple Leaf career, and he missed 12 games in Boston. I guess in 2008-09.
Well, he had the testicular cancer.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if that was the timing or not, but I would assume. But since the 2010-2011 season, he has played every single game. He's played 832 games now. He's got 296 goals, 649 points. He's got 66 points in 71 playoff games. That doesn't, like, jump off the page in terms of Hall of Fame comparisons.
Right, right.
Like, that's a great career, and I would assume... If he stays in shape or borderline in shape, he can put up more numbers.
You never know what the dynamic is going to be like going into the Hall of Fame in the future. Because the points that guys are getting, they're not even close. How are they going to bypass guys? Like, go ahead and look at Dave Vaynerchuk's points and tell me how he's not in the Hall of Fame.
But you just have to adjust. Right? You've got to adjust based on the era. If you would like to believe those
that
are
voting. Yeah, but look at Dave Vaynerchuk's numbers and tell me how the hell
he is.
Well,
so why isn't he in the Hall of Fame?
Was he
couldn't skate very well?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume the discussion would be in that room.
Yeah.
Was he ever a top 10 player in the league?
Right.
Now, maybe Andrew Chuck was at some point in his career, but he never really screamed top 10. Now, Phil's never been top 10 in the league either.
Well, at any close, moment, though, don't you think?
He had that year in Toronto before everything went south where he was legitimate. Like, he had 37 goals, 80 points. He was unbelievable.
He could not get 40. He had, like, 10 games or something to work with to get 40.
But he faded like everyone else. That whole team, that was the year they melted down coming back from California, I believe. That was the Johnny Burns injury in L.A. And then Reimer was okay, just okay. That was that season where halfway through that year, he was legitimately top 10.
He was. I was going to say, I think there were times where I remember being on this show, and I mean, Hayes, you would I know you had the hypothetical argument with Ray about Kessel and Crosby, but that was more of a situational thing.
That was coming off the concussion and more focus.
That was a hypothetical. But there were times where I would legitimately would have agreed with you if you said, Phil Kessel is a top 10 player in this league when he was on his game and dominating with the Leafs. I think there was close. It would have certainly been close. I know it's in hindsight you can look back and say, well, this guy and this guy, I get it. That's why I brought up at the start of the show when we were talking about Matt Murray. Guys, once they're retired, like I'll look back, and I think this is a great exercise. You look back at Andrew Chuck, or you look back at Chris Osgood's stats 10 years from now or 20 years from now, and if he doesn't make the Hall of Fame, you're going to be like, this guy's got four cups, Osgood I'm talking about, top 10 in wins and like all of this stuff, and you're like, why didn't he play? Or why is he not a Hall of Famer? The people that are voting are like, I remember him being a good goalie on a great team. Now, Andrew Chuck could have been situational.
He's always a great goal scorer. I mean, 50 goal scorer in Toronto. Yeah, I believe he did that twice, I think, or at least once anyway.
I would like to see them allowed to put in more guys.
Like Mark Recchi's another example. Recchi played like 1,500 games.
Yeah.
Great numbers, good playoff numbers. But was Mark Recchi ever a guy that was top 10 in the league?
Right.
I don't think so. He was just always a very good, consistent.
Well, then there's bias, though, Brian, because you look at every year guys go in and, like, Adam Oates, was he ever a top 10 player in the league? I love the guy, but was he?
I think his stats suggested that.
Yeah,
so did Dave Andrichuk's. That's the point. That's
why there's that. You're right. You're right, oh. I'm not arguing it.
All right, so what are we saying about Phil? Could you see a situation in 10 years where the Hall is voting on Kessel?
Well, he would have to continue on like this, you know,
he'd have to get up over 500 goals.
He needs a lot more to get even considered. That's that for me.
Right.
But like I remember Ginla left Boston, and one of the dopes down there, a scribe, said, I don't even think he's a Hall of Famer. Like, to me, Ginla's a lock.
I think he's I would assume he's a lock first ballot.
Right.
But I thought that about Shanahan, too, and Shanahan didn't get in his first year.
That was, honestly, play with the guy or not, 600 goals, two Stanley Cups, and you're not a first ballot Hall of Famer. One of the top power forwards.
Yeah,
much like a Jerome Ginla.
I look at a Ginla and Shanahan in the same
category.
But the thing is Ginla.
The other thing, Sundin went in ahead of Shanahan.
Yeah, Shanahan. Yeah, Sundin went in first ballot, you're right. Same year, I believe, and Shanahan had to wait a year.
I'll be honest. I didn't think Sundin was going to be first ballot. I thought he would kind of fall.
I didn't think either because of the Stanley Cups.
Right, but you look at his numbers. That's the thing. Like he had
national resume as well.
Well, his international resume, exactly.
Well, Shanahan had an international resume, too.
100%.
I agree.
The thing is, Mats was like the man on the team that won the gold and all that kind of stuff. You're right. No, they both did. But Sundin had, I remember a stat got picked up and was circulating around that time on Twitter, that he had something like 15 seasons with 75-plus points.
Who?
Sundin.
Oh.
And
he went on a run.
Like, there's only like 10 guys ever to do that. Like, it's like absurd how consistent he was every single year.
You talk about that. That might be the major factor. Like, if you do something where only 10 guys have ever done it, you get in.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. We all believe Sundin should be in. Shanahan should be in.
Yes.
They are in.
There's no argument.
And Ginla will get in. We'll catch up with Ray Ferraro, get his take on the game last night, start looking ahead to the offseason, tee up game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight. The Jays are off after taking 2 of 3 in Seattle. We'll get back into the crowd that showed up. A lot of Canadians, a lot of Blue Jay fans representing in Seattle last night. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. Game 5 of the NBA Finals tonight, back in Golden State. Tim Legler will join us to kick off the 6 p.m. hour to tee that up. We'll catch up with Ray here in a moment. I believe Ray is back in Vancouver. He's had a busy sked, man, over in Paris. Yeah, the Worlds.
He hasn't been home. I think he was telling Steph like 8 days in like 2 months or something like that. He's got young kids and stuff.
How much do you want to bet he plays golf tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. No, you don't
know.
Cammy's got a list of things for him, you think?
That's a here's the kids type situation.
I'll bet you he's on the tees tomorrow. If really? I know my boy Ray, I'll bet you he's
Jerry's percentage.
Tomorrow. 70%.
0%.
I say
kids.
2 days from now, 100%. Tomorrow is a 50-50, depending on if Cammy's busy. But I think he's probably going to, because if the kids are in preschool or school, he's going to try and slip something in there for sure.
Oh, yeah. If they're in school, man, he's...
Dude, I think the wife secretly resents any type of travel. And when you return, you pay.
Well, it's a job, though. It's like,
do you think they care? They don't care.
What do you mean they don't care?
They don't.
There's 3.5 billion women on Earth. Do you think they all collectively have the exact same mentality when it comes to a guy working on the road?
I do. And once you walk in the door, it's not...
Yeah, he's back in the door today. Puts in his time today.
It's not sexy time. It's not golf time. It's take these kids, get them out of my face, and do all these things I have written down on this piece of paper.
I say he's on the blocks tomorrow.
Yeah, if he's home today, I think there is a chance, but you never know.
I think he's on the blocks tomorrow. If I know my boy Ray, I think he is teeing up...
No.
Tomorrow afternoon.
No woman would ever let their man golf the first day home from a traveling trip.
Hold on. I would go to a movie. And that's
dude, you can
hours.
Do whatever you want.
You're in a different boat. Like, Noodles, right. Your whole lifestyle doesn't make sense to anybody. All right, we got a new read here for guests coming on.
Oh, God.
It's not that long. It's not a MyPillow.
What is it?
Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline.
Wow.
It's our main man, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Ray, I said 70% chance you play golf tomorrow.
I met with some resistance to a tee time tomorrow.
Are you playing?
No, I bailed.
Dude.
Oh, so yeah,
because your wife said you're not playing golf. And
she's like, are you serious?
That's
the line I got. Are you serious?
But you thought about it, right?
Oh, I asked.
Well, I know what you did, Ray. You asked Cammy, you said... What's the plan tomorrow?
Yeah.
You said, what's going on? What do you guys have planned? Because if she was like, oh, the boys are in school, I've got some shopping, you're going to like, I'm going to slide in a quick nine.
Well, what they want
to
say, Ray,
is... onto Dan Murphy's plate. My buddy from out here works at the other guys. And because he asked me to play, because I'm going to play Thursday at men's night. And I said, hey, Murph wants to play nine tomorrow. And she said, yeah, good for him.
Good for Murph. I love it.
Yeah.
Ray, don't you think, though, sometimes the significant other, whether you're working or whatever, they think you're on, like, vacation. It's like, I'm actually working.
I did. Yes, that's 1,000% true. But I did make a key mistake of sending a text message when we're right 12 feet from U2 and sent her a picture of the ticket and where we were. And she said, oh, that's great. I'm just cooking dinner. Then the kids have soccer.
Yeah.
It was not well received.
No, it wouldn't be.
No,
that was
yeah.
a dumb move by me.
That's
rookie
right.
move.
Yeah, that's the problem.
The hatred for the man having fun is so strong. I'm telling you what.
You are so warped, man. Like
no.
Oh, you this is what I was saying, right? Like now you've been on the road for a long time. So I'm not surprised Cammy was like, "Okay, Murph can go play, but you're not playing." I think my wife would do the same thing. But O believes every single woman on earth would have the exact same reaction. Is
yeah,
that not true?
It's like the man would walk through the front door and the mom would say, I hope you had fun. Here's the kids because I'm sick of it. And tomorrow you better do all the garbage that I wrote in that list on the kitchen table.
Well, okay, so here's what I've slowly come around to. So I've been home 8 days since April the 10th.
Yeah.
Which means she's had the kids... every day but eight since April the 10th. And when I was home, I don't know if I was any help anyway.
Well, you were there.
Well, I know you were playing golf one of those 8 days.
Yes, I was. I had to.
Of course.
And so I do think I've got probably a pretty lengthy list sitting around here somewhere that's...
Yeah.
But the other thing to balance it out is I'm useless at home, so I can't really do much anyway.
Well, you just signed a 12-day no-movement clause for golfing, so have fun with that.
No, everybody's talking about these guys waving their no moves and that. I just signed one, 12 days. I'm in.
Yes.
Well, until next Friday.
It's interesting you bring that up because we haven't really brought up the report. I think Pierre LeBrun reporting earlier that Ottawa has, in fact, gone to Dion Phaneuf and asked him to waive, and Dion hasn't made a decision yet. I think the fact that this has gone public, which I'm not surprised it has, but it's going to put Dion in a tough spot because now he's going to get blamed. Like, it's within his right to come back and say, no, I'm not going to waive. Put Mark Mathot out there. Yeah. Or trade Cody Ceci. And guess what? If it happens and they trade Ceci or Mathot gets claimed,
then your fans,
are going to blame Dion Phaneuf.
Well, I wonder. Now, they say he hasn't decided yet, or whomever the sources are that, you know, the guys get their info from hasn't got back to them yet. Like, I can't imagine this gets public unless he's already, I mean, they didn't just call him up and drop this on him or his agent. I mean, they've got to have been in conversation. I mean, hell, we've been talking about this stuff forever. Who's going to be protected? Who's going to be available? Of course they are with the players, too. I mean, especially those guys that are in that spot. I mean, in the, like, and then it goes, so they call Vegas. Okay, if we leave Dion off, you're not going to take him, right? Okay, and if you don't, then who are you going to take?
Right.
So I would just love to be in George McPhee's office and just see what's going on in there the last 2 weeks.
I agree.
I think it would be fascinating.
I agree. And the scary part, I think, for Phaneuf and his management group, which I believe it's Newport, they're going to know what's going on. But can you imagine if he's left unprotected and McPhee's like, yeah, I'll take him and I'll try and turn him into an asset somewhere else, right? Like,
they're not taking him. What he should do is just accept it and say, as opposed to the fans maybe disliking you because of Cody Ceci having to leave, the fans will be like, good job, you're a team guy, you took one for the team, and now you're back, and we still love you.
But why wouldn't you take him?
Hmm?
Why, if you're Vegas, why wouldn't you?
Well, we just talked about the defenseman playing in this Stanley Cup final.
Right.
Dion Phaneuf has been a solid addition there. He's good in the room. He's this and he's that. But the salary doesn't add up. So why would you pay a guy? Why would you want to pay a guy $7 million unless you're trying to get to the floor or something?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like, they've got to put people on the ice.
Well, here's the other. Don't you think, Noodles? Like, they're going to get to the floor, I think, is going to be the cool part of the cool parts of it. Is, okay, we're taking that contract, but we're also taking that young prospect as well.
Yeah.
Like, that's where they're going to get to the floor. They're going to take the cash on the books, but it's going to be in result to taking or getting another prospect in the deal somewhere. That's like, I just think there's going to be guys selected that we're going to go, why would they take him? And then they're going to get moved on to somewhere else before the day's out. Like, this thing, we're all guessing because none of us know. We've never, you know, it hasn't happened. And I would think if Dion, my own guess is if Dion's unprotected, as good a year as he had, he's not going to get claimed. There's just too many years and too many dollars left on the ticket for Vegas to pick up, I think, anyway.
Well, we were talking about Marc-Andre Fleury earlier as well, and Fleury is in a similar boat. He's the same age, I believe, or he's 31?
Yeah, he's 31.
And would Vegas want to claim him, or would they look at that and say, he's worth more to us in terms of assets we could get back if we claimed him and then traded him? Because even with him, we're not going to do anything for the next 2 or 3 years.
Right.
But here's the thing that Fleury would have on his side. He would be able to, because he's got the no move, he would be able to say to Jim Rutherford, I'm not waiving it to be put into the expansion draft and then have Vegas trade me somewhere that I don't want to go.
Right.
So he would be able to determine, because he would just say, no, I'm not waiving unless I have, you know, unless I have control of where I'm going. And that's every bit in his right to do. So That's why I think, man, there's got to be so many deals that are just sitting there waiting to be announced or will become apparent in the week following the expansion draft that, like, Fleury's either going to Vegas, in my opinion, he's either going to Vegas or he's staying in Pittsburgh, and he's not staying in Pittsburgh. Yeah. Like, I don't think he's going to end up in Calgary. I don't, you know.
Why do you say that?
Because I think if he's going to agree to go to Vegas, he's going to agree to go to Vegas.
As in, that's what he would prefer, you think? He wants to be in Vegas and...
I think he would be perfect in Vegas. Like, just think of that guy on that team. You're trying to, you know, make the people notice you. You've got a guy that they would know their name. It makes sense to keep him. And as Noodle said earlier, you know, you got to get to the floor. You got to spend some money. And his money's not so prohibitive and the contract's not so long. Vegas might take five goalies.
Yeah. Well, they should. They should take, I mean, the
one thing, the market.
You're right. The one thing that you pointed out earlier is you're going to grab goalies and turn them. And I would argue that the team that they take will be so different than the team that they ice in October, it'll make your head spin. I mean, they want to get a bunch of contracts. Obviously, they need to take a certain amount, but they can sign unrestricted free agents. There are teams that are struggling financially. Like, look at Chicago. You heard the report. We're saying, we'll give you TVR, but you got to take Kruger's money. You know, like, it'll be interesting to see the types of side deals that are made. And George McPhee has got to sit back and weigh out all the options. That's why I was saying it'd be interesting to see if Phaneuf is exposed. It's not that Phaneuf would play in Vegas, but he has a no-move clause. And I think Fleury has a no-move clause too, correct?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, they both do.
So they would have to even get turned over. They would have to agree to go to another team if they were taken and moved on. But I think there's going to be so many moving parts here. It's going to be exciting.
Well, what I don't understand, though, is the idea that Vegas is going to claim these players and then trade these players. Why would the middleman even need to be there? Why does Vegas need to be involved in that? Like, I read a piece, or I saw something, I think, on Twitter earlier today.
What are you saying? Like, why doesn't Calgary just call up Pittsburgh right now?
Like, because exactly. they've got the protection problem, too, probably.
Well, and that can factor in, for sure, that more deals may happen afterwards once they know the dust is settled and we've got protection issues, for sure. But there is, I thought I read this morning, an unnamed GM say he'd rather just give the guy for free to Vegas than make a bad trade. Right. In other words, like, his pride is going to be involved, or he's
right.
Not,
that seems a little soft.
How
doesn't
silly
it?
Yeah, is that? Really. Like, everyone will understand if you trade a guy for undervalue market,
fourth rounder,
but because you were going to lose him for free, it's not like you're going to have to explain this to people. Everyone understands,
right,
that you're going to lose him anyway. So get whatever you can.
I agree.
Why would you just say, forget it, I'm not going to take your fourth rounder, Vegas, you take him for free? Why would you do that if you don't have to?
So here's the other thing that I, you know, I mean, that to me, that makes no sense. Like, that means you're so worried about what people think of you, you're not gonna explore and push that to the limit, to the best thing that you can get. Like, that makes no sense to me. Here, just take them, and then I'm off the hook. Oh, gee, I lost a player. That's the way it is. Everybody's got to lose a player. So why don't you do your best to lose the one you don't want to lose?
Right. Exactly.
But so now Vegas, I think, to Noodle's point earlier about the, you know, collecting players or collecting, you know, collecting players and then not being the team when they get to October, don't you think that Vegas is going to take a bunch of these players that they select, because then everybody's out of the protection problem because the expansion draft's over, yeah, and then they start firing these guys off for draft picks to whoever's got cap space that wants them.
Okay. Like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
you know, and they end up with, like, I read one funny thing. They said George McPhee might end up with every pick in the second round.
Right.
Could you see him being up there 12 times?
That would be outstanding, especially in a weak draft, too. Teams are like, go ahead,
take
it. With
the 43rd pick, it's Vegas. With the 45th pick, it's Vegas.
That's smart.
Why not?
You got to get to 50 contracts. Load up on players. I mean, you don't have to sign those kids right after you draft them anyway.
Well, I wonder how many contracts they're going to take. Like, they don't have to, right? I don't even know what the rule is of the minimum number of contracts you have to have.
I thought it was 20 or 23 or so. There was a number.
But they'll have a few guys in the minors, you know, half a dozen.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And So they might get to 32 contracts. Why load up on contracts you don't want?
Right.
It's get enough to get yourself through the year, and if you have to make a deal during the year, you will have a multitude of draft picks to make one with, as some team wants to get something done during the year, and then you add one or two more contracts. Like, it's going to be this first year. I mean, there's the assistant general manager there, and the cap guy. Those guys are going to be working overtime,
mm-hmm.
Right from the ground up. I mean, what an exciting time for them.
Well, when it comes to the Maple Leafs, Steve Simmons was writing about this yesterday, that his understanding is Leafs are calling different teams about their defensemen being available, and they're countering by saying, okay, what's the story with Connor Brown? And I'm not surprised, because he's not a part of the big three. He's not Matthews, Nylander, and Marner. And I think we all would agree that the Nylander price has gone through the roof just based on the way he played down the stretch and at the World Championships. So someone else has to become a talking point. That's the way Toronto always works. Who's the other guy that might be on the table for potential trades? And he's in that middle ground. Again, he's not Matthews, Marner, Nylander, but he's also better than Soshnikov, Hyman, Levo,
correct,
the other young kids. He's somewhere in that middle ground. I have a difficult time really evaluating him, because he's 23, he's young, he's cheap, he's a good player, he's a smart player, he can skate. I think he's kind of a utility-type guy that can move up and down the lineup. How do you value him, Ray, and the idea that Connor Brown could be involved in trade talks between now and the middle of July?
He's really interesting, because he seems like he would be the most expendable, yet his versatility and what he does is so different than what the other guys do. Maybe that makes him, in its own way, very, very valuable. Like, if you take him out, does that open up room for Soshnikov to move up? Babcock seems to really like him, and he's kind of a misfit on that fourth line, I think. It seems like his game gets kind of cut in half, and this is all you get to do because, well, that's all the ice time we have. Like, could he do what Brown does? I don't know.
I don't think he can. I think what the debate is internally is how much better can Brown get? Like, is this it for him, which is 20 goals, 35 points? That's a good player. Kills penalties, can play in your power play a little bit.
That's a tough one, though, because he's 1 year in.
Exactly. Like, could
he
score 30?
He had gigantic numbers in his last year in junior.
Right.
So that's a tough one. It's funny, though, because I can see where the interest is for him. Like, I can see why teams would say, yeah, we're way more interested in him than, because you're not getting into the pockets of the other guys, right? Like, that's not happening now.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of boxed in. If you've got him, if you want that defenseman, if you think that defenseman's available and the price is Brown, well, I guess, you know what, the other thing we have to consider is, which defenseman are we talking about?
Right.
You know, like, is it one that makes you go, oh, we could really use that guy? Well, then maybe you make that deal. If not, you're going to, obviously the Leafs are going to offer something as little as they can, and everybody's going to come back and ask about somebody like Brown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why not? What if you can find a way to make the parts work?
Well, and that wouldn't shock me. I mean, by no means is Connor Brown off the table. I mean,
he's a
good player, but I think he's just a very difficult guy to place a price tag on, because, again, he's 23. This isn't like he's 19 and he broke out this way.
Forget,
he's an older
kid.
Taylor
Hall was a lot higher regarded than Connor Brown. So if Connor Brown's going for a D-man, Taylor Hall fetched Larson. So yeah. Connor Brown's not bringing you back.
You're not getting Josh Manson for Connor Brown.
People think that Connor Brown gets traded, or any one of the Maple Leafs, they're getting Fowler back.
No, that's not going to happen.
Give your head a shake.
It's not going to happen. But the question is, I think, do you take a guy who you think is on your third pairing? Because I wouldn't do that. Right. I can find a guy on the third pairing.
Yep.
And I know what Brown is. I like what Brown brings. I like that he's young, cheap,
you
can skate, and smart.
You don't move him for the sake of moving him.
That's the point.
For a purpose.
Exactly.
Yes.
So you're right. You're not going to get that true top two, top three defenseman. But I'm also not going to just be like, I can move on from him because I got a bunch of wingers, so let's bring in a guy who might be the fifth or sixth defenseman.
I think it would have to be a real kind of impact player. After watching that D-Core win the Stanley Cup last night, and Ray, you can weigh in on it. Don't you think Riley a year older, Gardner a year older, Zaitsev with another year experience to just kind of maybe see what's see what Dermott could do. Maybe they can sniff around on a couple guys, but just kind of be patient with that D-Core?
Yeah, the one thing that the one similarity owed to that too is that like Pittsburgh's D. I mean, are any of those guys in the top 75 D in the league?
Maybe Schultz is.
Maybe. I think Dumoulin. I thought Dumoulin was their best guy. But yeah, my point is, none of them you would say are ones and twos.
No.
Right.
They're just like this collection of guys.
Yeah, they're a collection of guys who can skate and
pass
play.
The puck to Sidney Crosby.
Exactly.
So the similarity I was going to make is that the Leafs have these forwards that have just exceptional potential. Like, not good potential, but exceptional stuff. And so that's maybe the biggest revelation out of this to me, out of the Penguins Cup win, is that if you have high end at one position, maybe you can work around the others. But if you're a team that just scores okay, like Nashville needed that defense. They couldn't have done what they did with Pittsburgh's defense. That wouldn't have worked.
Right.
But Pittsburgh could, because the guys they had up front, for the most part, they're exceptional players. So I'm interested. They may not have to right now go and smash the ball out of the park. What if one of these Swedish kids that they signed pushes his way in the next year in? What if Dermott is ready, or is ready by Christmas to take on a bigger role?
Mm-hmm.
It's possible.
They'll be thinking about all this, and we'll hopefully have answers over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a fun ride. Welcome home, buddy, and
welcome,
we'll do it
hell.
Again tomorrow.
By the way, how good was that picture of Phil carrying the cup up?
Oh, it was awesome.
It's Phil Kessel, two-time cup winner. Two for two.
When he skated by us yesterday, Bob and I, and he said, "Hey, two for two, hey, boys?" Man, we just about fell on the ice. And he had like this big, you-know-what-eating grin on there. And we're like, I go, "Who knew hockey was played late in June, eh?" And he goes, "I know, eh?"
Oh, man.
I love it.
I can't wait to see pics of him. He'll be fishing by tomorrow. Fishing, playing golf.
He doesn't even want to go to
the parade.
They've got
that parade Wednesday, and by Wednesday night he's on the lake in Minnesota.
Oh, he's gone, man.
I think he actually's got a place in South Florida.
He does. That's where he spends his summers.
Really?
Just like basting
in heat. You could see Phil soaking up the heat, couldn't you?
Oh,
it's so hot.
He'd look comfortable in the heat. He's apparently a great golfer. Loves to fish,
seems
golf,
like a natural
couple beers,
talent, yeah.
A few months off, wait for the cup ring, and do it all over again next year.
And start again.
That's right. All right, buddy, we'll do it tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Talk to you then, boys.
And Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline.
Nice.
Hot, hot, hot.
Red Tag Days are now on with 0% financing and lease rates on the Corolla and RAV4. Visit mapletoyota.ca. Tim Legler will join us teeing up Game 5 of the NBA Finals in about 20 minutes. Overdrive continues on the TSN Go app. Final hour coming up. Tim Legler from ESPN will join us. Tee up Game 5 of the NBA Finals. Jay's off today, back in action, back home tomorrow night. We'll look ahead to that as well and continue to put a bow on the NHL season. Hour 3 up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.